Welcome to Mark and Friends for Thursday, February 27th, 2025. I'm your host, Donna Leland, and today we have the delight of getting to know Leah Boden. She is the author of a Moody Publisher book, and this is on the life of Charlotte Mason, which I love Charlotte Mason, and she was an inspiration certainly for me whenever I was homeschooling my kids. Welcome to Mark and Friends, Leah.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Leah, I'm really glad that you are sharing the story of Charlotte Mason. I just feel like she is so underreported, don't you?
Absolutely. I think that the impact of her work and her writing has been kind of part of the conversation in home educating circles in the States and in the UK now, maybe from the kind of early 80s. But still very understated and pretty unknown, really.
Really unknown. And she was certainly an inspiration for me to dig into an alternative way to educate my children. And I found incredible inspiration from her ideas. But let's go back to the woman, Charlotte Mason. Take us back to her early childhood days, because your book really is taking all of these little details and putting it into a narrative. So kind of give us the overview.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of vision behind these books was the series, but particularly with Charlotte's book being the first one, was to give children the opportunity to get to know the woman who was inspiring and informing much of their education. So if they're in a Charlotte Mason school, or they're in a co-op, or their parents are using her ideas, children don't often, they may hear her name banded around, but they don't know who she is. And so she was really born into an unusual, quite difficult setup, really, in the 1800s. And she was born in quite a dysfunctional family, but eventually that kind of came together and was formed in her early life. She did have a lovely family upbringing, but her beginning, her origin story, was as started in Wales. She was born in Wales, ended up living in Ireland, and then made her way as a young child over to England, where she spent the rest of her life. And her dad was a Quaker, her mother was a Catholic, so they were the early sort of faith formations in her life. And she became she practiced as an Anglican Christian for the majority of her life. And her parents died before she was 17 years old. She lost both her parents and began this journey into teaching. She was an apprentice teacher at the age of 13.
Wow.
I don't know how many 13-year-olds people know, but I can't imagine them beginning their apprenticeship as a teacher. But the Quaker tradition, there was almost an expectation that many, many people, women went into teaching if they were raised in the Quaker tradition. And so I don't know if it was a case of what else am I going to do, but it really became a calling. And she began teaching and then kind of took on this mantle after viewing what education looked like in Great Britain at the time, in England at the time, and she wanted something different. She saw something different, and she has this phrase which she carried through her whole life, which was for the children's sake, and everything she did was for the children's sake. Mm. And it's amazing kind of thread that we see woven through her work and her life.
She really was a visionary. And even as we look at her ideas today, they certainly go countercultural to some of the things that children have to endure as they sit in your traditional school setting. Detail some of her unique ways of seeing a better way to educate a child.
Yeah, I often call it this upside down, inside out approach to education. I mean, actually, Donna, when I first discovered her, her methods and her philosophy reminded me of my early childhood schooling in England, where on reflection, maybe some of her influence had lingered. So I went through the normal UK system, but in the primary school years, so I guess elementary, We had a nature table in the classroom. We went for walks. We had a reading corner. So there were little elements of freedom in the classroom that I think lingered from her influence, but not much more. And it's a national curriculum and core government ideas of kind of teaching children the same thing as they came in, and that began to change. Two of the major ideas of hers that are really countercultural. She asks the question, what do you believe about children and what do you believe about education? So the child, she says, is a born person. And what that means is they are not something that we can fill or control, or they're not this lump of clay that we get to form.
Yeah.
That God created them and he made them whole. And so they come into the world with an ability to contribute. But what we get to do is to facilitate that atmosphere. We get to facilitate the resources that inform their lives. So she talks about living books as opposed to dry textbooks. She talked a lot about children being out in nature, just being connected to what God had created for them and learning from that, and that being a foundation to their scientific discovery. She talked about engaging with art and music and poetry, and that these weren't just for special children whose parents were educated and had, you know, the finances to do that. This was for everybody. She felt every child should have this wide and spacious educational environment that we can then get to see this great unveiling of who they actually are. And it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. But it is very countercultural.
Now, the same thing was going on in France with Maria Montessori. So maybe people are more familiar with the idea of a Montessori school. And so this was also Charlotte's heart, is that there would be more of the word discovery within the child's interaction. And I just remembered something that's just really took me to heart when I was bringing up my kids and homeschooling them, is don't get in the way of a child's education. And that just, oh, God just put that on my heart. Do not get in the way. Don't be there to impose everything on this child. Give them the information. That's why I love the living book idea, because it wasn't a stale textbook. A stale textbook tells you everything you need to know. It's filling a bucket.
That's right.
But it's not. Yes. You're discovering who this child is and what they think, and giving them space to interact with the material in their own way and in their own unique way. Yeah, it's so countercultural to what a traditional school system wants to do. It wants everybody to do the same thing all the time.
Don't
ask questions. Yep. Just sit, be quiet, and I'm going to tell you what you're going to think and believe. And I mean, you do need that, as far as this is an A and it's pronounced A, you know.
Yeah,
so you give them the basics.
Of course.
Right? And then you let them go.
And she talked about mastery, didn't she? So she did actually say, we want our children to be educated, but have to delight. Like, we can do it in a way that actually produces delight. And she asks the question at the end, I love this, that she asks, at the end of a child's kind of formal educational room, she says, how large is the room they're in? And it's not about how much they know, but how much do they care? And when I read her work, and I've been a student of hers really for almost two decades, it's this beautiful, spacious place, which speaks to me of the kingdom of God. You know, the Father's house has many rooms. And I when I read her work and have been able to be a practitioner of her ideas with my four children, that is what I'm always wanting to do, is like, how spacious. And so when you just said that, what you just pointed out there, Donna, that getting out of the way, what we are doing is creating space for our children. We're not being the lecturer. We're not being the interpreter of the knowledge. We're saying, hey, listen to this story, or look at this piece of art, or look at this tree. Tell me what you see. Rather than saying, let me tell you what you should see. And traditional education spoon feeds our children, you know, kind of like, this goes in and this must come out. Yeah. Whereas the Charlotte Mason philosophy turns that on the head and says, I want to hear your contribution. And we do have a responsibility. She has this term, masterly inactivity. So I think often people might be listening, if they've not heard of this before, they might think, well, this is a very kind of, you know, don't do much, just kind of give your kids some books and walk away. She was very intentional about being, you know, plan the work, understand the books that you're going to give them, walk alongside them, be in the room, as it were, but still leave room for them to be able to narrate, is one of the phrases, the terms that is used, for them to be able to tell back what they see, hear, and experience. And it's just beautiful.
It really is. And it gets it. It really gets it into their little brain and heart. Two of the things that I tried to implement is the narration, where they have to respond back and tell you in their own words what they know. And that is so perfect, because that's how you know they know it. And then I also loved her copy work idea of just copying down large swaths of the Bible, large swaths of a passage.
Oh,
and you
yeah.
get that hand and that eye and the motor skill all connected. And then you can communicate it verbally too. So I felt like that was very, very powerful. And something else I appreciated about her is the read alouds. I think she was the one who really dug into my heart and said, read to these children. She would have just, you know, an hour or so reading. And I did that. And I, you know, we would sit and I would read whole books. I read all the Little House on the Prairie books to my kids.
Oh, I love that.
I went through the Russians. I went through as much as I could. Also my heart, and I think Charlotte Mason inspired this into me, you know, don't beat out the love of learning from your child. And I feel like my own education, the love of learning was beat out of me. It's kind of like the moment I was just getting something, you know, grasping that crazy algebraic concept, the bell would ring. And it would be it would be snatched from me. It's like my little brain almost had it. And then my little brain had to stop, get up, take everything with me, go to a different classroom, and then learn about language, you know, and I had just almost gotten it. Whereas I think the Charlotte Mason method and homeschooling gives that child that extra half hour or whatever they need to really figure it out in a relaxed environment. And that's what I tried to give my kids. There was some moments of, you just have to do this, you know, we just have to do this.
I want you to be able to do your taxes one day. So we got to do this.
Maybe they could even, you know, go to work for the government and do a better job, you know, dealing with people's taxes. I mean, that was always the hope. We'd improve the environment that we were in. But there was a lot of great takeaways from her, her insight into a child's mind. Now, did she also work with children who were, you know, underserved, underprivileged?
A lot of her work, so she kind of spent years teaching children, and then she was trained in a college where she was teaching women who were going to be governesses. So she was kind of rubbing shoulders with the upper class a little bit, people with more wealth. She had a period of time in doing that. And as she was forming her ideas and forming her philosophy, and very much informed by thinkers and educationalists who had gone before her, she's quick to reference them in her writing. So she's heavily influenced by others. She starts to form her own thoughts and ideas and starts writing these down. But all the way through, what she was seeing was, you know, if you had wealth and opportunity, then you went further and you maybe went to university or you got to, you know, do many more years of schooling. But if you were from, say, a mining village or a more working class community, they were kind of rushing kids through the basics of the school system so that they could join the workforce. And it's almost like they were cutting massive things, areas out of those children's education. And her, all the time she was saying, this is for everybody. The outcome may look different for them. They may end up working in a factory or working, you know, whatever's going on. But actually, they all, no matter what they're walking towards, should have this same experience and exposure to beauty and truth. And she didn't often see that. There's a story. She has we have access to six volumes of her work that have been republished. So called the Home Education Series. That's kind of what it'd be rebranded as. And in the very final book, Volume 6, which was published after she died, actually, but in the opening of that book, she talks about in her 80s, how she heard one of her colleagues had started to take living books into cottage schools, which were basically mining villages, like small working class. And she was taking living books and giving them to the headmasters and of these schools. And they were looking at art and they were having opportunities to go to art galleries. And she was hearing about the impact. And her kind of final few years on earth was this, finally, I'm seeing what I always wanted to see, was the impact of this being available to every child. And so I don't know if she really got to see fully with that aspect of the impact of her work, but her legacy continues. But what she did get to see, what her real, much of her work and emphasis on, was on training teachers and governesses to go out and do the work. And that is really what she was doing in the Lake District in Ambleside. She had a school of education there. The building is still there. You can still go and see it. It's fantastic. And you know what's great, what's interesting about Charlotte Mason is that she said, I don't want my name to be remembered, but I want the work to continue. And obviously we got both, didn't we?
Leah, how do you approach writing stories? So you're taking all this historical information and giving it a context and putting it into a narrative. How does that play out in your life?
Yeah, I mean, writing Charlotte's story, I mean, it's an incredible privilege, but I also was so aware of the delicacy of writing about somebody's life, of how delicate that is, and how I wanted to be careful and honoring of her story. And I'd been, as I said, a student of her work, reading everything I could get my hands on,
yeah,
by her and about her for almost two decades. So the part of the challenge for me was what do I put into this book? I've got 30,000 words, a middle grade audience. What do I actually want to share with them? What do I feel will be the most important aspects of her life? And so, I mean, you know, I'm writing biographically, so I do go through the whole of her life. And I just kind of kept reading there are two biographies written for the adult audience that I've read multiple times, I know pretty well. And then I also have access to the archives because I live a few hours from the Lake District where they keep them. So I got to read letters, I got to look at photographs, I got to see some of her belongings, which is incredible. Mm. And then also looking at, every time I picked a part of her life, I looked at the historical, you know, what else is going on in Great Britain at this time? What else is happening? And then tying those together. And so this series, we called it the fictionalized biographies. We may have made up that genre, but hey, why not? Mm-hmm. And so I got to kind of take the foundation of the biography, get these wonderful aspects of her life, and then have this beautiful freedom just to kind of weave story into that. And that just really flowed as I kind of took each aspect and then looked at the geography, where she was living, what was going on in that period of time in England, who were her contemporaries, you know, who else would people or children recognize and have heard of, yeah, and then really tied all that together. So it was great fun. It was hard at times getting it right, and this is why we have editors, and yeah, I thank God for editors. My editor's fantastic, and we really kind of, you know, drew out of what I, my initial draft, you know, like, okay, this is the stuff that we need to present. But it's a wonderful process. I got to the final, I remember doing the final edits on the final chapter or the penultimate chapter. And spoiler alert, I do the whole span of their life. So they do die. They're in the series, in the books, wonderful people come to the end of their life. And I knew that I'd done this journey very deeply because I felt very emotional editing that, you know, penultimate chapter where I was writing the scene of the last moments of her life. And I felt quite teary, quite, you know, weepy while I was doing that, thinking, wow, this is it. This is how her incredible life ended and the continuation of her legacy started. And the great thing is knowing that there are hundreds and thousands, really, probably, of parents all over the world who are continuing her work. And you are one of them, Donna.
Yeah, I'm a part of her legacy. I am.
We're a part of her legacy.
Yeah.
And when you think about that, you know, wow, thank you, God, that she so humbly laid down everything for the sake of children so that we could pick it up and run with it, you know, in the 21st century. So it was a privilege to write this story. And I really hope that it blesses many families and they get to, and that children actually get to know the person who their mother keeps talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, thank you so much. We've been enjoying Leah Boden, and she has a lovely accent from our mother country and helping us understand the life and times of Charlotte Mason.
Thank you so much.
Leah Boden is the author of the historical fiction Angel Orphan, The Life of Charlotte Mason from Moody Publishers. And we do have some books to give away. So if you would like to give us a call, we will go through our answering machine and then we'll get number one and two, caller number one and two. We'll put that book in your hand. And don't forget that we ask you only win once a month, or, you know, leave some of the other resources for others. Our number here at Great News Media is 217-897-6333. Again, that is 217-897-6333. I'm your host, Donna Leland. Thanks so much for joining us for Mark and Friends. We are a ministry of Great News Media, listener-supported Christian radio for Central Illinois. Thanks again. You can always go back and listen to our archives on our website. Just click on the Mark and Friends and you'll see all of our past programs sitting there in an MP3 formula. Hope you have a terrific day and we'll talk to you soon.